Now, I'm going to ask you this slightly tricky, but could you, if you had to sum up the day in two or three sentences, how would you describe what happened to you?
It's difficult. Well, the first sentence I would say, I'd had a fantastic day out. It was a great day. And that just changed instantly to a nightmare. I couldn't have dreamt up a scenario much worse for myself in the mountains. My emotions just went from black to white, you know, complete 180 degrees. I was almost ecstatic from the day being successful to being, oh my God, you know, the mountain rescue guy's waiting and he's furious. The police were there from Portree who wanted to interview me, so I suddenly felt like a criminal. I thought, I'm responsible for all this. I must have done something to fire all this process off. I was the kingpin which, you know, started it all off. And I just felt a huge response. I thought, I'm going to be raked over the coals for this. I could find myself in court. That was just one of the worst things that could have happened to me in the mountains, and it remains so, really. It goes against my grain.
That's Adrian Oram, though if you know him well, you'd probably call him Scranner. He's a computer games lecturer at Sheffield Hallam University. He's also a hill walker and a climber. On the 19th of May last year, he and three friends set off from Glenbrittle to climb Sgwr na Banachgych in the Sky Coolin. It's one of the easier peaks on the ridge. Unlike most of the rest, you don't need to use your hands to get to the top. The four of them had an early lunch, and then at the summit, they split up. Two of them headed back to the glen, but Scranner and his friend Mike carried on, heading northeast along the ridge. They found the ridge harder than expected, but they coped well. There was enough challenge to make it interesting, but not too scary. They were enjoying it. It was a good day in the mountains. And that's the first sentence, the first story. But for Scranner and Mike's friends, on Skye and back home in Sheffield, a completely different story was playing out. Scranner and Mike had leading roles, only they knew nothing about it. I'm Christopher Slight, and this is Mountain.
Hi, Chris.
Hello there. Why don't we start off just by each introducing yourself and just give me your name. So there were two other people in the group that day. There was Dave Lindop.
Yeah, my name's Dave Lindop. I'm a retired general practitioner from Penistone, which is in South Yorkshire. And we've always had an interest in fell walking, which started even in my teens when we used to go up to the Lake District.
And Dave's wife, Anne.
Yeah, I'm a retired nurse and I love the outdoors as well. I've been walking since I was a kid.
We go up to Scotland once a year, every May, to hopefully bag a few Munros. And the last two or three years, our friend Scranner, who this is all about really, has joined us for a week or two.
And a couple of years ago, my brother started joining us. He discovered the joys of Scotland, so because he was there on that day as well.
We set off about 10 o'clock in the morning and we got up to lunch below the summit. We're getting a bit hungry about 12:30 and the weather wasn't that great, but we sat down and got the sandwiches out. And Scranner, on the way up, Scranner, our friend Scranner, also known as Adrian, of course, he decided he was going to switch his phone off onto silent mode because he was getting calls coming in from work, from both work colleagues and also students who were pestering him about exams. And he was just getting fed up with it and decided to switch his phone onto silent mode. I watched him do it on the way up about an hour into the trip.
We weren't in the cloud at lunchtime, but when we went up onto the summit after lunch, we couldn't see anything. We were just in a sort of swirling mist, really. We got odd little glimpses of the view as the cloud came and went. Dave and I never had any intention of doing any of the ridge, but my brother Mike decided that he would like to have the experience of doing a bit of the ridge. So we said goodbye, really, and just watched them disappear into the cloud, and we headed on back down again.
Scranna had done his homework. He'd checked before they left if the section of ridge north of Sgwr na Bainigich was suitable for a novice mountaineer like Mike.
In the description, actually, I have it in the... there's a guide here which says that the mind-numbing central section of the ridge can feel endless. So it was suggesting that it was fairly straightforward. I know the ridge is fairly technical, but it's probably a reasonable scramble for someone who's not done that kind of thing before. So we agreed that we'd both have a go and scamper along that part of the ridge.
You've obviously spent a bit of time on the Coolin Ridge, and I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful place for hill walkers and climbers and anybody who loves wild places. Just tell me a little bit about your feelings about being on the ridge, why you keep going back, why you have this desire to do the full traverse.
Well, it's the challenge in terms of ridge traverses, but it's just so wild. It looks so dangerous. It's not manufactured in the same way that a lot of the places in the Alps are, for example. You're there on your own. The weather can change very, very quickly. You can get everything in a day. It's just wild. It's inescapable. It's committing. It's technically interesting. There's route finding. It's kind of got everything in the space of just a few kilometres, really. And it is just a challenge. I'm just up for a challenge, really.
And like any of these places, it has risk.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I'm not an avid risk taker, but I like to control it as far as I can. But yeah, I mean, you feel pensive when you do these things, when you're on a ridge and you know that the slightest slip could end up in your death, or worse still, the death of one of your colleagues or friends. But it's afterwards, isn't it, when you get that release and you realise you've done it and you're safe again, and it's just that buzz you get afterwards, really.
Scranner and Mike weren't that far along the ridge when the peace was shattered by a big red and white Coast Guard helicopter that appeared in the skies above them.
We were about an hour along the ridge. We were going quite slowly, so I wasn't representing a great deal of distance. And a chopper was clearly flying around, probably over my picnic site where I'd stopped to have something to eat. And we just commented that, oh, look, there's a chopper out. He must be on some sort of... practice session or something. So that was thought that was quite nice, and the chopper very quickly disappeared off back down into the valley. About 20 minutes later, the chopper came along the ridge, clearly looking for something. He spent a long time looking at us. He was off the ridge to the west, probably a couple of hundred meters. We could see the guys in the door. They were looking at us, and I didn't think anything of it. We just thought it was quite nice to have someone being our guardian angel. They were taking such an interest, I thought the thing to do now is to let them know that we were fine. So I started to use the arm signals for no, we don't need rescuing, you know, one up, one down. I also started to stick my thumbs up because I figured they had binoculars on us, so I started going thumbs up, thumbs up. And in the end, I thought, well, it'd be nice if they actually finally cleared off because they were very noisy. So eventually they did disappear to our great relief.
What happened then? At what point did the day turn from sort of routine to something different going on?
It stopped being routine for myself and Mike because it soon became very obvious that this section of the ridge was not mind-numbingly boring. It was really quite technically challenging, especially for Mike. Route finding wasn't easy, so I was having to go backwards and forwards like a dog trying to get over a fence. And in fact, there was a few lads behind us who decided to do the same thing, and they abandoned, they turned around and went back. So very quickly, I became responsible for Mike because it was my friend's brother. He'd not done this sort of thing before. He was essentially a newbie on the Sky Ridge, and suddenly I felt a huge responsibility.
It comes in on Tuesday, the 19th of May, and it's at 13:25, and the first message is SOS! Exclamation mark. It then has a HTTP, an internet address, and then there's a brief audio file, which only lasts about 5 seconds. My name's John Scan, S-K-A-N, and I've known Adrian for about 30 years. We met at university, and we've been close friends for a long time. I work as a GP, and I just come back from doing some home visits, and I just checked my text messages, and that's when I spotted this unusual text message from Scranner. I would have to say that Scranner and I do not text very often. You know, it's not a common means of communication. But obviously, these text messages did sound somewhat worrying.
Scranner had sent John three text messages. The first one says SOS! Exclamation mark, and has a Google Maps link. The second is the slightly sinister sounding audio file, which is called Emergency! And the third states, I need help, and has another link to a map.
It brings up, I think, a Google Map grid reference, which is obviously in sky somewhere. When I read this, I thought, you know, I was a bit concerned, but sometimes, you know, we're known for having a bit of a laugh with each other and being a bit sarcastic, and I thought maybe it was just error or something. But I tried to phone.
But there's no answer. The call rings out. John tries again and again, but he can't get through. What are you thinking then?
Well, because I was unable to contact them, I thought I was getting a bit worried, because I thought it's with this sort of information, SOS and I need help and unable to contact them, I thought, well, we've got to take this that seriously, as though there may be some issue or problem, because I know Scranner likes climbing and I know he would have gone up on the Sky Ridge, so as far as I was concerned, there was a definite possibility that some incident may have happened. With that information, I felt that you had to take it further in case he was injured or hurt in some way on the Sky Ridge.
John knows that Scranner is in Sky with Dave and Anne, but he doesn't have their numbers. He calls some mutual friends and forwards on the SOS text messages to them. But they can't get hold of Dave and Anne, and so they call the Sky Mountain Rescue Team directly for advice. Within minutes, the police are notified, the Coast Guard helicopter at Stornoway is scrambled, and all members of the Sky Mountain Rescue Team are called out. John Scan also phones Scranner's brother to let him know what's going on, and the news spreads quickly around friends and family in Sheffield. By 2 o'clock, it's likely more than a dozen people, including the police and Mountain Rescue, are trying to get hold of them all. But Dave and Anne are out of signal and, like Scranner and Mike, are blissfully unaware of the chaos.
We probably were out of phone contact for about an hour, because at about 2:30, we started getting phone calls coming in from various people. And our first phone call, I think, was from an ex-medical colleague of mine.
That was from Biddy.
Oh, sorry. The first one was from my sister-in-law ringing to see if we were all right, because she'd clearly received some messages from John Scan. And another friend of ours called John Cooper, who was involved.
They knew that we were all up there, so they were wondering if we were up on the ridge. So they were worrying about, well, they didn't know what the situation was.
At that point, we decided we would sit down and try and sort it out. So Anne and I sat down for a good half an hour, 40 minutes, and then we were getting phone calls from police and Mountain Rescue. And we assumed immediately, because the phone message had gone from Scranner's phone, that it was probably Mike who was in trouble, because he'd never been on a ridge before and he'd only ever climbed one Monroe before. So we assumed it must be him and obviously feared the worst.
We also wondered if there was some sort of glitch going on with the phone right at the start. We wondered if that was a possibility.
I thought it was a genuine message.
I think when you think there might be some sort of drama unfolding, you try and think of a way that it actually might not be happening, and, you know, you find a way for it to be all right.
You're sort of desperately maybe seeking an explanation that isn't
exactly
going to mean that you have to face the worst at that time.
Yeah. Well, we both feared the worst, I must say. I mean, all sorts of things go through your head, but Anne was clearly quite upset.
I was worried about my brother, because I didn't really think he had the experience maybe to be doing what they were doing, and the conditions when we left them were pretty bad, really. There was no visibility and there was a cold wind blowing, and I've never done any of the Coolin Ridge, but I sort of know it by reputation, so I wasn't dead keen on him doing it, really. but he was insistent that he was going to give it a go.
And then what happened? So you were there making phone calls for a good half hour or so, and eventually did the police say, you know, head down to the valley or...
Yeah, eventually they said, right, we've got everything we need from you. We want you to make your way down safely, but as quickly as you can to the bottom. So we set off again at that point.
Probably a good hour still to go to the bottom. And so we went down an hour discussing it and both feeling quite upset by
We felt pretty grim at that point.
What we'd seen, you know, and what we'd heard. So we still felt for sure at that point that Mike had probably fallen off the ridge or was injured at some location.
I was trying to imagine how I would ring the family and explain to them.
I was writing an eulogy for his funeral in my head.
Nice.
All sounds a bit bizarre, but that's the sort of thing that was going through our minds at that point. We could hardly speak to each other, really.
And then when we were almost down, the helicopter came and hovered directly above us, and the winchman came down and landed just in front of us, which was quite exciting if we hadn't been so upset, with a camera in his hand.
And he came running across the fell side with a camera.
Yeah.
That we looked at, for all intents and purposes, just like Michael's camera. So we were then thinking he'd found Mike's camera.
Oh, no.
Oh, God, my heart sank. I don't know about yours, then.
That was awful.
I said, that's Mike's camera. They're coming with Mike's camera.
And you're sort of in a sense of disbelief as well. You know, you just don't really think it's really happening. Which it wasn't.
OK, let's back up a bit. Remember when the group had split up on the summit earlier in the day? Just before that, they'd eaten lunch on an outcrop near the top. Scranner was being bothered by phone calls from work, and so he put his phone on silent before pushing it into his sack and pulling his sandwiches out. He then propped his pack against a rock and used it as a backrest, a common enough lunchtime ritual for a hill walker. But something... It could have been a rock, it could have been Scranner himself rummaging for food. Something hit the power button on his Samsung phone 3 times in quick succession. And then...
My phone, it's a new Galaxy S6. 3 quick presses of the power button evidently sends off an automatic SOS message to someone who you've obviously, you know, set up to get it sent to. Which was my friend John Scan in Sheffield. I didn't know that was happening, but it happened at that point. Now, John didn't pick up the message till another 45 minutes had passed. He was at work, by which time, of course, we were that distance along the ridge. Seeing the helicopter arrive over my spot, because, of course, it sent the coordinates of where I was when it sent the SOS. I could hear my phone on the ridge, humming away in my rucksack, saying, well, I'm ignoring that. It's probably to do with PPI insurance or some such thing. Middle of the day, and of course I was ignorant of what had happened earlier. I must have set it up. I must have put John Scan's number in as the recipient of any SOS message I may have been wanting to send. And I can't remember for the life of me, because it was a new phone, so I guess I just lay down one day and went through all the options and had a look at them all and maybe set one or two up. And I guess it was one of the ones I set up and forgot about.
But while he was up on the ridge that day, Scranner knows none of this. He's still having a good day in the mountains, whereas down in the glen, his friend's emotions are about to go from despair to confusion as the winchman brings the camera over.
In actual fact, he wanted to show us a photograph on his own camera to say, is this them? They'd taken a picture of them up on the ridge.
Yeah, they'd taken a photo from the helicopter of them both coming down the ridge, seemingly looking okay. So
they just wanted us to ID it for a positive
and at
ID.
At that point, we realised probably things weren't as grim as we'd imagined. We'd given them a description as well of what they were wearing, which was fortunate, because apparently the winchman was really pleased that Scranner was wearing a bright pair of pants, luminous green pants that he just got from a Rab sale. And whilst we thought they were disgusting in colour, the winchman said that's what made them stand out, because they were trying to pick these guys out on the ridge from the helicopter.
So now, at least you think, well, it sounds like they're safe, so there must have been some sort of relief. At that point, no. So you're feeling that relief, but then you've got to go down and face the wrath of the police and mountain rescue team.
Well, the police were really nice. There was a police car waiting for us at the bottom of the path, and he was a really nice young man. And he took us down to the
blue light flashing.
He took us down to the rescue hut where the team were assembled, ready to set off, and that did feel.
Well, yeah, there were probably 20 team members and some dogs. And
we felt really guilty, not that we'd done anything wrong, but we just felt really bad walking through them all.
Once they realised it was a false alarm, of course, they were able to stand down. But at that point, Jerry Aykroyd, the team leader, there was steam coming out of his ears.
They were all geared up, ready to go. And
he was saying to us, if this is some sort of prank or joke, you lot are going to get a massive bill from it. I mean, he said the helicopter was scrambled from Stornoway, and the cost of the helicopter was £1,500 an hour. Well, it'd been flying around for 2 or 3 hours. We weren't made very welcome at that point.
Well, I wouldn't say that. We just felt
a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah, we felt a bit uncomfortable, but nobody was unpleasant or anything.
Well, we tried to say to Jerry, look, our friend Scranner, who just would not do anything like that as a joke. He's an experienced mountaineer. He's climbed Mont Blanc. He's climbed Mont Blanc solo, in fact. He's climbed all over Europe. He's climbed in America at Yosemite and been climbing for 40 years. And he's the last person on earth who would ever call a mountain rescue out unless his leg was falling off.
Then there's nothing to do but sit and wait. It's 2 hours before Scranner and Mike finally make it back to the cars. 2 hours before the stories finally collide.
During which time we started to feel really cross with them.
Yeah, more than a bit.
Once we knew they were okay, we just started to feel annoyed.
Tell me about the moment when they sort of meet you and are full of the joys of the day, having had a really good day on the ridge, and you sort of you prick that bubble.
They came skipping down the fell side. Anne's brother Mike was so pleased that he'd managed to do a good kilometre of the ridge.
He was absolutely over the moon that he'd actually achieved what he'd achieved.
Yeah, and Scranner was dancing around with his hands in his pockets, clicking his heels together like some sort of Monty Python character.
They had absolutely no idea.
And we just laced into them, said, you haven't got a clue what's been going on down here. And we've had to bear the brunt of everybody's anger, so to speak.
Scranner and John have said to me, Dave, that you were actually pretty angry. And can you remember what you said to him?
It's probably not repeatable on radio, but it was. He's my best friend, Scranner.
I know.
I was so cross that we'd had to go through all that grief and heartache, and then it was just obviously they had not got a clue of what trouble they caused. I mean, they'd been up there waving at the helicopter and sort of, you know, thinking they were out on a training exercise. And I don't know, we just couldn't get our heads around the fact that they were sort of skipping down the mountainside like nothing had happened.
And the last 50 metres down, we could see the car, they could see us. I was waving my arms, I was jumping up and down, saying, wait, we're back. And they came out the car to meet us, walked to 50 metres up the hill, maybe to embrace us, to ask us about our day and how great it had been. Instead of which, it was like how an angry parent berating a child for being missing. Do you know what mayhem you've caused, Dave was saying. And in about 2 minutes, I got the full story. So my emotions just went from black to white, a complete 180 degrees.
And then we tell Scranner we better go and talk to Jerry, the team leader, and eat humble pie, because he was still fairly fired up. Or he was when we'd left him anyway.
But they did say at the end of the day that it's much better to know that somebody's safe and well and alive than to have to launch a rescue. So it's much better to be stood down than to have to go and do a rescue and for it not to turn out well. So it all ended well at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I like to think that when Jerry met me, we were well equipped. I looked the type, unshaven, weather-worn, sensible, and I think he calmed down fairly quickly. I like to think that when he realized that I was as shocked as everyone else that my phone could have done this. I mean, I was mortified, you know, utterly mortified that something as simple as my phone could have caused such mayhem.
He was so upset by it all, really, because it's just not in his nature to cause people bother like that. He was really quite disturbed by it, wasn't he?
He entered the room apologising.
Yeah, Mike and Skrana ultimately decided, of course, to make a nice hefty donation. I mean, they gave a few £100 to the Mountain Rescue as a token of thanks to them, which was nice.
This whole incident, though, this episode has, in a way, it's given you a glimpse into the abyss. I mean, lots of us enjoy hill walking, climbing. We know there's a risk associated with that, but we try and manage those. And ultimately, we believe those risks are worth it for the benefits. But when you've been through an experience like this, you can see, you know, the possible consequences. Has that changed either of you at all?
I already had a great deal of respect for going up a Munro. I always feel, you know, that I want to have the optimum conditions and know what I'm doing and not go if I think if it's at all risky. I wouldn't have wanted to do the ridge. So I think I already had enough fear.
The bottom line when it comes to my friends is their sense of humour. Dave laughs all the time. Anne laughs all the time. We have a brilliant relationship. We all lead our lives through humour, really. And to see Dave so furious, the way he told me off, essentially, to see how the humour dropped out of the world for those few moments, it was awful.
Skrana's been doing these things for years, but we're not experiencing in terms of climbing ridges with ropes and all the rest of it. I mean, and Skrana's always got the gear. But, I mean, it won't stop us doing a Munro again. It won't stop Skrana doing anything like that ever, I don't think.
It might get him to check his phone settings before he heads out, though.
Yeah, I reckon,
We'd like to think so.
Steven and Lindop. Many thanks to them, John Scan, and of course, Adrian Oram, Skrana. I did email Samsung a few times about this story. They didn't get back to me. Editing help from Hugh Williams, other guidance for this episode from Anna Macquarie, and music was from Gelsonic, Circus Marcus, and Kevin MacLeod. Our website is mountainpodcast.com. Go there for previous episodes, pictures, links, and the mountain newsletter, which is the best way to stay in touch. If you enjoyed this episode, please go to iTunes and leave a review. It really helps other people find us. Go do it right now. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Christopher Slight. This is Mountain.